This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Friday, August 13th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, the U.S. Census Bureau has released new data that multiple states plan to use for redrawing district lines. We'll look at some of the highlights. We'll also bring you the latest installment in our housing crisis collaboration with the Rocky Mountain Community Radio Coalition. And as housing costs continue to soar in Colorado, grassroots organizations are gearing up for a legislative fight to overturn the state's longtime ban on rent control. At 8:30 this morning, Connections comes your way. Fiona Foster's guest will be Adrian Miller, author of the book Black Smoke, African Americans and the United States of Barbecue. Then at 9:30, the Morning Sound Alternative will start your weekend off right with an eclectic mix of music until noon. All that is still coming up, but first, these headlines with KGNU's Stacey Johnson.
Some of Mesa County's election equipment has been decertified after County Clerk Tina Peters allowed an unauthorized individual into a secure facility during an upgrade of the county's election software. That's according to statements made yesterday by Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold. Griswold's investigation also alleges that video surveillance of the voting equipment was turned off by county clerk staff before the equipment upgrade in late May. The unauthorized individual is alleged to have taken photos and videos during the upgrade, and password images of the Dominion Voting System's election equipment were later posted online by right-wing and conspiracy groups. As a result of the security breach, Griswold has decertified 40 pieces of the county's election equipment, including a server, scanners, and tablets, and as a result of the breach and decertification, Mesa County will need to replace the equipment. The Mesa County District Attorney's Office is performing its own investigation of the alleged security breach. New research from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration suggests that volatile chemicals from consumer products are another major culprit behind ozone causing air pollution. According to the Colorado Sun, studies led by Matt Coggan, a chemical engineer and researcher with NOAA's Chemical Sciences Laboratory, have shown that chemical evaporation from a range of products, including sunscreen, bug spray, perfume, deodorant, shampoo, and even scented trash bags make up 42% of the human-caused volatile organic compounds in the atmosphere, and transportation emissions make up nearly all the rest. Coggan recommends consumers use water-based products to limit ozone-causing air pollution. The Denver Northern Metro Front Range, including Boulder County, breaks a single-season record for poor air quality. Steve Miller has more.
There have been 53 ozone action alerts since May, which breaks the record for number of alerts issued in a single season since record-keeping began in 2011. In recent days, due to climate change-fueled wildfires burning across the American West, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment has issued action alerts for multiple pollutants that include both ozone and fine particle pollution from smoke. The Denver Metro North Front Range has reached 39 consecutive days of ozone action alerts. The smoke and ozone levels we are seeing are caused by wildfire activity worsened by climate change and air pollution sources that cause climate change. High ozone levels are produced when volatile organic compounds, VOCs, mix with combustion emissions in the presence of sunlight. In Boulder County, VOCs predominantly come from oil and gas operations to the northeast and combustion byproducts from vehicles. More smoke and high temperatures are predicted to continue this summer. Individuals can sign up for Colorado's action alerts and check air quality conditions at the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment's website and search for air quality. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
Boulder Community Health announced yesterday it will require all employees to get vaccinated against COVID-19 by November 1st. The Daily Camera reports the spokesperson for Boulder Community Health has indicated 94% of providers' employees and physicians have been fully vaccinated. If employees do not vaccinate or qualify for a medical or religious exemption, those employees can face suspension without pay or termination. Children's Hospital Colorado also announced yesterday it will require all staff, vendors, and volunteers to complete a COVID-19 vaccination series by October 1st, but stopped short of a full mandate. The hospital said in its statement that personnel who do not fully vaccinate by October 1st will be subject to increased PPE requirements, as well as routine COVID-19 PCR testing. The Boulder Parks and Recreation Department announced yesterday it will change operating hours and implement service adjustments to its facilities as children return to school and summer ends. The department did announce it will open after Labor Day the North Boulder Recreation Center Leisure Pool on weekdays, an opening that has not occurred since March 2020. Community members are urged to check the city's website for the latest updates to the park and rec facilities. This evening, starting at 8:30 p.m., the Lions Park and Recreation Commission will hold a stargazing event at Bone Park called Lights Out Lions. The event includes guided talks with live music afterwards. To limit light pollution and to support dark sky awareness and stargazing appreciation, Lions officials are encouraging community members and businesses to turn off their lights. Today's weather is predicted to be mostly sunny with a high near 85 degrees. There's a 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly between 3 p.m. and 9 p.m. Tonight is expected to be partly cloudy with a low around 59 degrees. The Colorado Department of Health and Environment has issued an ozone action alert for today until 4 p.m. The temperature outside at the Boulder Studios is 64 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Stacy Johnson.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The U.S. Census Bureau released new data yesterday. Among their findings, senior demographer Mark Perry says U.S. population growth has not been this slow since the Great Depression.
Population decline was widespread this decade. Most counties lost population between 2010 and 2020. On average, smaller counties tended to lose population, and more populous counties tended to grow. Population growth this decade was almost entirely in metro areas. Metro areas grew by 8.7%, and micro areas grew by 0.8%. Population in territory not in a metro or micro area declined by 2.8%. All 10 of the country's most populous cities grew this decade.
The 10-year population study also reported that the number of people who identified as mixed race increased dramatically. Nicholas Jones is the director and senior advisor of race and ethnic research and outreach in the Census Bureau's population division. He says for 2020 census, they tweaked the way they asked about people's race and ethnicity.
The number of people of Hispanic or Latino origin who identified as white alone decreased by 52.9%, down from 26.7 million to 12.6 million over the 10-year period. Between 2010 and 2020, the number of people of Hispanic or Latino origin reporting more than one race increased from 3 million, 6%, to 20.3 million, 32.7%, a 567% change.
Many states plan to use the new data to start redrawing their voting districts. The Census Bureau plans to release another data set in September. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. Southwest Colorado is facing a housing crisis just like many other rural communities across the Mountain West. To combat the problem, local organizations in the region are building affordable housing developments. But the housing crisis is a complex issue, and additional housing inventory won't solve it alone. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Lucas Brady Woods has this report.
In Southwest Colorado's Montezuma County, what little housing is available just isn't affordable for many residents. Rents are being pushed higher and higher because there's such low housing inventory in the region.
Folks can't afford our high rents. Our wage scale here is fairly low, so we've got folks that just literally are paying way too much of their income to stay housed.
That's Kelly Willis. She's the executive director of the Pinion Project Family Resource Center, a nonprofit that provides a variety of services to Montezuma County residents. The organization has a handful of subsidized housing units available for low-income individuals. Willis says the organization also has plans to build a 50-unit affordable housing complex in Montezuma County. Tenants there will have a portion of their rent covered based on their income.
Everybody, regardless of income, 30% of their income, if they have it, is what their rent remains. And it's not transitional housing, so it's not time limited. People can remain there as long as they need to.
Housing projects like this take time, though, and the Pinion Project's development hasn't even started construction yet. Willis says it's still looking for financing. That means it won't be move-in ready for another 2 years at least. Another affordable housing project in the area is being built by the Montezuma County Housing Authority. That project will include about 40 units, but won't be finished for a while either. According to the Housing Authority's executive director, it won't be move-in ready for over a year. But there are hundreds of people in Montezuma County who are struggling with housing insecurity right now. Willis says the waitlists on Pinion Project properties alone have around 400 people on them. On top of that, resources are especially scarce in Southwest Colorado for people who are experiencing housing emergencies, such as homelessness or unsafe living conditions. And the few that are available are only temporary fixes.
There's really not a lot of options for unhoused. Hopefully, we have put what I think is probably a Band-Aid on a lot of our emergency needs for housing.
And even when the affordable housing projects are finally built, they'll probably only scratch the surface of the housing crisis. The city of Durango, in neighboring La Plata County, is the closest population center to Montezuma County. Carrie Harrison is the head of Oak Tree Resources, an organization that helps youth find housing in Durango. She says that Durango already has several subsidized apartment buildings, but that they didn't make much of a dent in the housing crisis.
Even though we have the affordable housing built in Durango, they're all sitting full, and we don't have the supply available that is even close to being affordable.
Harrison also says using affordable housing as a solution has limitations.
Whether it be the young person I'm working with or a 30-year-old, that working adult who still can't afford a place to rent, they don't qualify for affordable housing, and they're floundering.
Dr. Benjamin Waddell is a professor at Fort Lewis College in Durango. He studies poverty and systemic inequality, and he thinks that people need to shift their thinking when they consider possible solutions to the housing crisis. For example, he says there are some concrete steps communities can take to redistribute some of the wealth that's concentrated around housing.
One of the ways that towns like Durango need to look at this is by looking at lodgers' taxes. I think they need to be more aggressive.
He also says it's important to remember there are factors outside the housing market that are interrelated with the housing crisis.
We've seen the inflation of higher education, the inflation of medical costs. We've seen the inflation of transportation costs across the board, housing. You see this inflation of costs, but wages have really just kind of flatlined.
Waddell says that if members of a community can't afford to access essential services because their wages are too low, they can't change their economic situation. And that creates inequality in areas like housing. Carrie Harrison, back at Oak Tree Resources, also thinks people need to start shifting the way they think about the housing crisis.
People need to educate themselves. We need to educate people on how easy it is for someone to struggle with housing insecurity. And the focus has to change regarding what homelessness is or the potential for homelessness.
Because, she says, anyone, including her own family, could be one paycheck away from housing insecurity. For KSJD News and Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Lucas Brady Woods.
Have you ever wondered why city governments along the Front Range haven't stepped in to try to do something about the skyrocketing cost of rent? Well, they legally can't, but that may change soon. A group of organizations has formed a coalition calling itself Colorado Homes for All, and they're gearing up to make overturning the rent control ban a priority in the legislative session. KGN News' Rosanna Longo-Better spoke with Cecia Guardarrama of 9to5 Colorado, a working women's advocacy group that is part of the Colorado Homes for All Coalition.
Oftentimes people will ask why, as a women's organization, we work on housing and, like, you know, why we're focusing on renters' rights. And the reality is that women tend to be one of the most vulnerable groups to face rent increases when we see a lot of single mothers or women who are already impacted by issues like equal pay for equal work or make up 2/3 of the low-wage workers across the country, they are more likely to be rent burden. So rent burden is anyone who is paying 30% of their income or more towards rent alone, which for most Colorado families and for most Colorado women, most people are paying more than 30% of their income towards rent alone. And that leaves them with little choices on where else to spend their money, like medicine and food and basic necessities that they need for themselves and their families.
Colorado has a ban on rent control that has been in place for decades. What's the story behind how it came into being?
You know, I don't know if I know every single detail about the story, but you're right. Colorado has a statewide prohibition on rent control that came into effect in the 80s. And that was through state statute, right? Through legislation that prohibited any local municipality from enacting any form of rent control. We know that Colorado's not alone with this type of prohibition. We actually saw a wave of these types of prohibitions and laws all across the U.S. So we're not the only state who has this prohibition. I don't know exactly, you know, what were the reasons behind enabling this prohibition at the time, but it is something that has been placed through state statute. Oftentimes folks confuse this with Telluride, a small town in Colorado that tried to enable some affordable housing policies. And this went all the way to one of the courts in Colorado. And they actually said this is a form of rent control that this legislative session has been, you know, worked on a little bit. So there are two separate things. One is case law and one of them is actual statute. But yes, you're right that this law has been on the books for a few decades now.
What steps are your organizations, because I know it's a coalition now, planning to take to rally the necessary support to overturn the state preemption ban on rent control?
That's a great question. So there's a coalition that is made up of grassroots and member-based organizations called Colorado Homes for All that has prioritized rent control across the nation, right? So for example, the state in Massachusetts is having the same preemption fight. They have a similar ban, right, where they need this lifted. And so this Colorado Homes for All coalition is co-anchored by United for a New Economy and 9to5 Colorado. We have a steering committee of organizations that sit, including folks that represent workers, that represent tenants, that represent community with disabilities. And we are broadening our coalition to make sure that this is a priority for the state, because every time we knock on doors, all of our organizations, we see the impact that rent increases and rent cost is having in our communities. That is like the number one issue that people talk about. And they're slowly being pushed out. We are seeing it the way people have to move further and further away to be able to afford to live in Colorado. And sometimes people think that this is a Denver metro issue, right? They say this is only in Denver or an area surrounding Denver. But we know that's not true. When we think about areas like rural Colorado, we know that the workers, for example, that work in like Aspen and really high expensive tourist areas, right? They don't live there. They have to commute, right? They have to commute maybe an hour, maybe more than an hour, because they cannot afford the rent to live in that particular region. And so it's not just a Denver issue. It's an issue across the entire state around affordability, really.
And equity and access.
Definitely. So yeah, to answer your question about what we're doing, right, I think the coalition, definitely we have grown and created the structure needed to build power. And that is our goal, is around building power, growing our base all across the state, connecting both the work that needs to be done by local elected officials and state elected officials to create the tools that are necessary for them, right? We know that, for example, the cost of a two-bedroom apartment in Lake County versus Arapahoe County, yeah, there's going to be some difference, right? Maybe there's also some difference in the number of vacancies. There's a number of differences in the development that is happening. It's not going to look exactly the same. And so what we're really focusing right now is learning what are the local housing solutions that currently exist and what's missing, right? How can the use of rent control be one of the tools that we can use to keep people housed and to keep the displacement from continuing to happen? Because yes, like I said, we know most Coloradans are rent burdened at this point.
If efforts to overturn the preemption ban are successful, what do you think rent control would look like in Colorado?
So I think it's a two-part puzzle or two-piece trajectory that we see. Because there's a state ban, right, that ban needs to come off first to say, like, actually local municipalities and local governments are free to use the tools in their box as they see fit. So the way I would see it is this ban needs to be lifted first. That needs to happen at the state level. And then local governments and local communities can implement a policy that makes sense and that works for them and their communities. And oftentimes people hear the word rent control, they get really scared. They bring examples of in California or even New York or other places where they say, like, oh, it didn't work. Like, this was the progress. And there is different models, right? There's different tools. And so right now, like, I'm not even that far in. Obviously, the heart of a policy would be around making sure that people continue to stay housed and that it's done in an affordable and accessible way. And there's actually a report by Urban Habitat that talks about how rent control and just cost policies have actually created like healthy and thriving communities. And there's still been a profit for landlords. Like, it doesn't mean that they didn't have enough money for repairs or there wasn't any profit for them. And so I think that there are different ways that it can look like. I think every local municipality will decide what is best for them. But the first step is lifting the statewide ban.
I have been speaking with Cecia Guadarrama Trejo, and she is with 9to5, and we have been talking about rent control and what coalitions are doing in order to try to bring down this preemption that does not allow for rent control. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo-Better.
And that does it for today's Friday Morning Magazine on 88.5 KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. Special thanks to Stacy Johnson, Steve Miller, Rosanna Longo-Better, and Alexis Kenyon for their work on today's program. If you have a comment that you'd like to share with us, you can give us a call at 303-447-9911. We play those comments back on the Tuesday Morning Magazine at 8:25.